With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Timms and me, Phil Nickel. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. My name is Phil Nickel.
And I'm David Timms.
Thanks for listening to our podcast, guys. And all the regular listeners, thanks for tuning back in. It's really great. We've been receiving so much great feedback from everyone. It's really making my little tiny heart glow.
It is something that made my little tiny heart glow. And I'm not going to mention this too many times, I promise. Okay. But last week, right. The Tim Minchin episode.
Ah, yes, well.
Now, It really warmed my cockles.
Yes,
it did.
I bet.
And I listened to it again.
Did you?
Yes. And when I listened to it again, I had the same reaction to his beautiful song.
Well, if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. It's episode 5 of Songs of the Key of Laugh. And you can listen to Songs of the Key of Laugh if you're not already on songsofthekeyoflaugh.com. This week's episode, we're talking to Richard Thomas and Suze Kempner. You may have heard the name Richard Thomas because he wrote Jerry Springer at the Opera with Stuart Lee. And the guy's a fantastic musician. And Suze Kempner, if you haven't heard of her, is just an up-and-coming musical comedian. She does amazing musical tributes to people. And she's just a really, really lovely, funny woman.
She's got a great voice.
She's got a great voice. And we're going to have our comedy song competition. We're going to be doing the quickfire parody game, which never goes well.
It never goes well at all. But I've got such a good feeling about this week. I said that last week.
But before we do that, here's a little clip of what the interview sounded like. This is Suze Kempner and Richard Thomas.
Oh, the sky is blue and the grass is green. Billions live in poverty, but not the queen.
Thank you very much. This one's called Love Song Number One.
I loved you from afar, but close up you were a dog.
Oh, yes. This one's...
David and I have been talking about comedy songs that we heard when we were younger in our youth and things that kind of affected us. And as you know, David, because I was raised in that sort of a more devout Christian family, which was a Scottish family. So it was a great sense of fun and humor that went around the family. It wasn't like quiet and it wasn't tragic. It was kind of fun. My little Scottish mum, she's one of these wee Scottish church ladies, you know, the sort of wee lady that chit-chats a wee all the time. You know, sort of wee lady, don't you have to talk back to her. She'll just keep the conversation going. In fact, if she hears this podcast, she'll probably be on the phone be going, what are you doing making fun of me, Philip? I'm your mother. Well, you'll miss me when I'm gone. You'll miss me when I'm gone.
Is that a good impression?
I hope so, because she's going to be really angry anyway. But my mother was had a great sense of fun, and she had all these really daft songs that I guess they have a Scottish background. I don't really know where this one's from. If anyone knows where this song is from, write into us at songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com and let me know, because like this goes.
Well, you can't throw your granny off the bus. No, you can't throw your granny off the bus. Oh, you can't throw your granny, cause she's your mammy's mammy. No, you can't throw your granny off the bus.
I like that song, Phil. I remember singing lots of different songs in nursery and then growing up in singing assemblies and things. Yeah. And there used to be a song called I've Got a Body, a Very Busy Body, and It Goes Everywhere With Me. Right. Have you ever heard of that song?
Never heard that one.
No, well, okay, but in my head, because I was a 3-year-old child, 4-year-old child,
right,
I used to say, I've got a potty, a very busy potty, which a potty in England is where you do a poo-poo or a wee-wee. So I would find that hilarious. And there you go. But the other song that I had in mind is one that actually goes along with the song that you were just singing.
What, you can't throw a granny off the bus?
Yeah, it's very, very similar,
right.
But it's about, it goes like this. Stop the bus, I need a wee-wee. Stop the bus, I need a wee-wee. Stop the bus, I need a wee-wee. A wee-wee cup of tea.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of influences from comic books as well, like the Beano I was allowed to read, or Dandy.
Yeah, the Dandy. Yeah.
I remember there was a character called Claude Hopper who had like feet like a canoe.
I think that you read an earlier version of the Beano than
You're
I did.
You're dating myself.
My favourite is probably Dennis the Menace.
Dennis Menace. Oh, yeah. Ur Willy was the Scottish one.
Who's that?
Ur Willy. He's like a little blonde boy with spiky hair and overalls.
Ah.
And he was from the Brun family. They called the Bruns. And they had, they're very famous in Scotland.
Okay.
You don't know Ur Willy?
Did they do like a trail? Edinburgh a couple of years ago, they had lots of, what is it, Ur Willy.
I remember getting all those, like, all those annuals. Like, I got like Ur Willy and Doctor Who. Were you a Doctor Who fan?
No, I'm.
Do you remember the theme song is classic? If we're talking about musical comedy, it's not really a comedy, like a comedy song, but it is a classic novelty song. I mean,
well, it's got the most classic novelty instrument, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, the theremin.
The theremin.
Yeah, I like the theremin. I've got one.
You've got one.
Yeah. Theremin, I don't know. Okay, here's a little fun fact for the listeners. Theremin was actually the first electronic instrument. You wouldn't have electric keyboards without the theremin. Theremin was used by, you know, Dr. Theremin invented it in order to measure the cooling of liquids. And so the sound would go down. That's how, I think it was nitrogen, maybe. I'd have to look into that. And then he realized it could be used as an instrument because you put like a volume pedal on it. If you turn that stick, you know, the stick of the theremin that you move your hand up to make, as you get closer to it, the note gets higher. If you turn that on its side, that's what Moog did, is he turned it on its side. And as you move your fingers up along the post, closer to the where the post would be, the notes get higher. And that's how that's why you're playing an electronic piano now. That's Clara Rockmore playing Rachmaninoff on a theremin.
That's a theremin?
You've heard anything like that?
Sounds
like a violin.
That's incredible.
Now, Bob Moog, who created the synthesizer, discovered this. It was an instrument that I think, I don't know if I've said this. Have I said that already? By Leon Theremin, invented it as, I thought it was invented to measure temperatures of chemicals, but actually it was a motion sensor. It was a motion sensor, like a device.
Okay.
That's what he was studying. He was a physicist.
Right.
And then he invented this instrument. Clara Rockmore learned how to play it. She'd had some problems in her youth with her hand and wasn't able to play the violin. And on that recording, she's playing along with her sister. So it's pretty cool. And that's what they've used in the Doctor Who theme.
That is
And Good
amazing.
Vibrations.
Good,
I mean,
yeah.
I think Led Zeppelin use it. I mean, it's pretty nifty.
I mean, that's the most beautiful theremin playing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's superb. Okay, are you ready to play some theremin? Because
I know we've got one. I went over to my friend's house earlier on when you said that we might have something to do with theremin. So I thought, okay, I know somebody who has one. Apparently, you do, but you didn't think to bring it.
I know.
No,
I've got a homemade one.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I bought it at McCary's.
Ah.
It's by a guy that makes them down in Somerset somewhere.
Okay.
It's like a wooden theremin.
Well, we've got a Moog here.
Yeah, we've got a Moog theremini.
So
and this is the Doctor Who theme.
Is it? Phil Nickel on the theremin.
Doctor Who.
I love Doctor Who growing up. I mean, and that song, that's one of the all-time clubs. I mean, I know it's not technically a comedy song, but it is a novelty song.
Oh, 100% novelty, yeah.
It's a theme song. And it's a song that I reckon almost anyone on the earth probably has heard. Well, maybe not everybody.
A lot of people.
But even people in the Amazon have heard that song.
There's so many different versions of it as well. Yeah. I had a little look online earlier on. I did some looking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while I was doing some looking up, there was about, I don't know, 40, 50 different versions of this.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow. There's a lot.
There's all, any kind of traditional song, like that is, I mean, an instant classic. I mean, we it's still relevant now, but there are songs like from, you know, traditional English folk songs, like that one. This is one my mum used to sing, actually. It goes, it's like a traditional folk song. I think it's parodying like a nursery rhyme called What Can the Matter Be? And it goes, and I think it goes like this way. And it goes, oh dear, what can the matter be? Three old ladies stuck in the lavatory. They've been there from Monday to Saturday. Nobody knows they're there. Have you ever heard that one?
I don't know this song.
Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Three old ladies stuck in the lavatory. They've been there from Monday to Saturday. Yeah. Nobody knows they're there. I think that is absolutely...
That is right down my street.
It's really, really funny. In fact, the rest, I won't play the rest of the song, but the rest of the lyrics are this. So like, I got them here. The first one's name is Elizabeth Porter. She went to be rid of some overdue water. She stayed there far long, more than she ought to. Nobody knew she was there. The second one's name is Elizabeth Pomfrey. She went in to make herself really comfy. That said, girls, I can't get my bum free. Nobody knew she was there. And the last one's name was Elizabeth Carter. She was known as a world-renowned farter. She went in and played a sonata. And nobody knew she was there. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Three old ladies stuck in the lavatory. They've been there from Monday to Saturday. Nobody knows they're there.
Toilet humor will always win.
Farter sonata. That is a great rhyme.
Now, Phil, it's time for my favourite part of the show, which I know that I say probably for all of the parts.
You say for every part, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, well, this is one of my favourite parts of the show. This is the comedy song contest.
Yeah.
It is a contest, isn't it?
Not a competition, no.
So we've been asking you guys to send us in your comedy songs. We've had lots and lots of submissions, but please do send them in. We love to listen to them. We're getting lots and lots of song suggestions in, but we want to hear what you do. We want to hear your stuff, so please do send us in some more songs, and you could end up getting played on this podcast. So we're going to play you another tune here from Eddie Hurst. This is The Phone Call.
Got a phone call yesterday from my phone service provider. They said, Mr. Hurst, can we help you out in any way? I said, ain't seen my dad in 18 years. Last time saw my mum, she's in floods of tears. I need guidance. Can you tell me what to do? I was thinking more your contract, sir. Do you need a new handset? The latest iPhone's out. It's the best one yet. My house burnt down. I lost my job. My wife left me 'cause she thinks I'm a slob. And she's right. And it's true. Not really qualified for this. Melissa. Sounds to me like you need a counselor. I'm just on minimum wage in a call center. If I give you free calls and texts, can I hang up on ya? If you hang up right now, downloads will be free. And that's how you get a phone. You know it is, it really is. Thank you.
Well, can I get given a song we know and have to change it up and make it so hysterical that you win the cup? This game is really easy, just follow all the rules. The rules are really simple, you're not allowed.
It's the quickfire parody game round, which is probably one of my least favorite rounds. As you know, because everyone's your favorite.
We don't do many rounds. This is one of your least favorite.
Well, this one very rarely works out, but it's always kind of funny. And we're going to stick with this because till the end of this season, at least, because this is just dumb. And if you want to hear our guests play the game with us during their interviews, but because it is always a bit funky, we've taken them out. We've put them on our Patreon. So if you want to go to patreon.com/songsofthekeyoflaugh, then you can find out how our guests did playing this game.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Game. It's not an easy game.
No.
So what happens is I give David the name of an artist and a title of a song, and then he has to come up with a quick fire parody of it. And it's sort of the first thing that comes to mind, or it's usually scatological or something really.
Yeah, but this week, Phil, you're going first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're going to go with one of your favorites, Meatloaf.
Meatloaf. Meatloaf's not
Meatloaf.
Not one of my favorites.
Is he not one of your favorites?
I don't think so. I do. Oh. I mean, actually, it's hard to get away from those. Those veer into comedy song territory, I think.
Ooh, okay. Well, this one is. I'd like you to do Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Do you know
Paradise,
it?
Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Okay. I think
Meatloaf
I think
song. Okay. Paradise by the Dashboard okay. Light.
Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf, and this is my quick fire parody.
Okay. It is your quick fire parody.
Okay. I remember every little thing as it happened only yesterday. Parking by the farm, there was not another car in sight. Well, I never had a girl looking any better than you did. And all the kids at school were wishing we'd meet that night. And our bodies are cold and close and tight. Don't know. It never felt so good. It never felt so right. And they were glowing like the metal on the edge of a knife. Glowing like the metal on the edge of a knife. Come on, hold tight. Come on, hold tight. Though it's cold and lonely in a deep, dark night, I can see a pair of radish by the dashboard light. There ain't no doubt about it, we were doubly blessed. We were barely 17, and there was barely any salad dressing. Oh, God.
Oh, my God! Are you okay?
I think so. Well, that really wasn't as much of a parody as me singing the song and just adding the words "a pair of radish" to the dashboard. I'm sorry, everybody. I genuinely apologize. That might be worse than Stand By Bees.
That might be worse. But, I mean, yeah.
That's pretty bad.
And the bar was low.
Okay. Well, let's see how you do then.
All right.
You're doing Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
You're doing Stevie Wonder. And you're going to do Master Blaster. No, Superstition. Stevie Wonder, Superstition.
Superstition.
Superstition by Stevie Wonder. Go on then.
There is something.
That's the one. We all know it.
I know this song.
It's a quickfire parody game, and this is David doing quickfire parody of Superstition.
Very unnutritious. Eating chocolate bars. Very unnutritious. pastries made with lard. No? But it is so tasty. You got to eat it all. Donuts made with custard. They make you fat, not tall. If you eat all the things, then you better understand that you might suffer. Unnutritious ain't the way.
Okay.
Yeah?
Vegan. Do you write comedy songs?
Ever dream of being the next Tim Minchin?
Or being Tim Minchin?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why not enter our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition and maybe appear on our podcast?
With Tim Minchin.
That's better.
The Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition. Enter today. Visit songsinthekeyoflaugh.com for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that brings us to what it must be your favorite part of the show.
Well, every part is my favorite
well, that
part.
That seems to be. It's also my favorite part of the show because it's when we talk to our, well, normally we talk to our guest, but today we're talking to our guests.
Oh my God, there's a plural.
There's two of them.
Whoa.
One of them you'll know as Richard Thomas.
And the other one you'll know as Suze Kempner.
The guest on today's show. Dumb, that's your own fault, but you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is insert name here.
Suze Kempner and Richard Thomas.
Ah.
It's Suze Kempner and Richard Thomas. Now, if you know Richard Thomas, you'll know that he was one of the people that brought us Jerry Springer the Musical. And if you know Suze Kempner, you'll know that she's a magically funny young comedian, who one of my favorites. And also a brilliant singer and vocalist as well, which we're going to get to here on Songs in the Key of Laugh. Welcome to the podcast, you guys.
Ooh, thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah. I'm drinking red wine and enjoying my intro.
I'm soothed. My voice is a bit rough today.
Sorry, Richard's never off.
Is red wine good for the voice? Is red wine a good thing for the voice?
Red wine's a terrible thing for the voice, but it's all right. It's only Richard's music.
I'm globally acclaimed.
Yeah. You are. Well, no, I mean, Richard, you're an Olivier Award winner.
Yeah, that's, you know, just the
I mean,
one.
I mean, that's...
I was robbed of one, though, you know. It should be two, but otherwise I've got one.
What were you robbed from?
Well, okay, I think, right, and it's just like I did the libretto, which is basically a fancy term for words and lyrics for an opera. Right. They're all operas about the life of Anna Nicole. It's fantastic. Went to New York, went to Germany, all the place. And I it's just pathetic, right? But it was a good lesson. I did honestly make room on my little awards cabinet place for a second living. I thought, it's an absolute shoo-in. There's no way this can't win. Because, I mean, I wasn't even nominated. There was some of the sun. You know. So it was, you know, it was a good lesson.
But did you make the space?
Yeah, no, I did. I was thinking, I can't. I just thought it was a shoo-in. Well, I knew it was coming up. I thought, well, there's absolutely nothing else in the world of opera that could be any better than that. Anyway, so my hubris was rewarded with me kicking the nuts.
Between us, we have one Olivier.
And I learned a valuable lesson. It's not about the awards. If you're doing it for the awards, then you're a twat.
If you're listening to this podcast while cleaning an area in your shelf for an award, you're going to never win.
That's what we've learned.
I'd like to tell you about the last award I won. It was a runner's up trophy for a darts competition, right? Which I then left in my car, and somebody ransacked my car, took everything that was in it, and the one thing they left was the runner's up darts trophy.
That's really sweet.
Because they were like, "This is very special, and I can't take this."
I can claim that they stole the Grammy, but it's not going to stand up in court.
Obviously, I haven't won anything like that, but I think winning a Mercury Music Prize or a Grammy would be an exceptional evening.
That would
probably
trump
drink a lot of red wine.
That would definitely trump.
Oh yeah,
that would trump an Olivier, wouldn't it?
A Grammy. I don't know, because I only found out what the Grammys were when I was a kid watching The Simpsons, and that Homer wins a Grammy, and a hotel guy finds it and goes, "Oh, it's a Grammy," and he throws it in the bin.
I know the episode.
So let's talk a little bit about comedy songs, because I mean, this podcast sort of explores not just comedy songs like the basic, Ernie the Fastest Milkman and stuff like that, but also the stuff that you've written between. Well, you're writing a show together, which is why we have you on together. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I shout ideas and then Richard turns them into songs and also has most ideas of the ideas.
Okay. And how far along is this show? Is it written?
Well, there's a ton of material. We've done about 5 or 6 gigs.
Well, more, I think. Hang on.
7 or 8.
So, yeah, seven or eight. And it's coming up to 9 and 10 in December.
And it was a sort of thing that's just been... How did it all start? We just kind of...
Didn't you get asked to do it at that Notting Hill gig? And you went,
"Oh yeah!
Who can sing?
Oh, I just sing."
Richard only knows one female singer.
No, I see. I remember. Of course, it was that. I completely forgot. Yeah. So, in the first half, I wrote this piano thing, which is like a sort of I'm writing these things called piano dramas, which are sort of like this one was called Rhapsody in You, and it's like sort of 20 little pieces with a title. Like a silent movie title put up. And in fact, I've done another one called The COVID-19 Variations. And which Alison Jackson, the famous, the great artist, has all those sort of looky-likey pictures, like the Queen on a loo with the knickers ran around and all that, She's doing like 19 films. Well, she just did the Duran Duran 40th anniversary thing, and she's doing 19 little movies for these little 19... Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That was act one. And then act two, we did a show called Wrong Songs for Christmas. And then we did it again in Easter, and we called it Wrong Songs for Easter. Yeah. And then we did it in Wrong Songs for Summer. And I kept saying to Suze, "What's wrong with this title?" And Suze eventually said, "Why not just call it Wrong Songs and pretend?" That's it.
I love Wrong Songs. What are some of the wrong songs? Do they have titles? Do these
all have titles.
Oh, yeah, they got like...
There were 90 in the show at one point.
We could do some. Do you want to hear some?
Yeah, why not?
Yes, please.
We're just going to make some short ones. They cover all sort of stuff. So it could be like this one's about the monarchy.
Oh, the sky is blue and the grass is green. Billions live in poverty, but not the queen.
Thank you very much. This one's called Love Song Number One.
I loved you from afar. You were a dog.
Oh, yes. This one's a song about semantics.
Let me fuck you, 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 let me fuck you. What I'm trying to say is hello.
Oh, yes. This one's a blues.
Wanna tell you a story? Well, life turns to shit. On second thoughts, forget about it.
Anyway, do you want any more? There's loads more like that. It just goes on forever. They're all longer ones.
what I love about that style of the presentation is that you can just do sort of non sequiturs amongst jokes, and the whole thing becomes funnier and more ridiculous.
Well, yeah, we do actually do little sections, and I've done it basically like, so what and where is in the end, it's also almost like turned into a musical about Sue's. So like there's a Sue's I Want song, and there's a big Sue's 11 o'clock number. So it's sort of, you know, you've got the classic, you know, opening number, you've got an I Want song, you've got a comedy patter song about drug, you know, drugs, sort of Sue's drug of choice and all that sort of stuff, and going into a, there's a big love ballad, and then there's a, you know, and in between you have all these little quick fire gags, bam, 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 bam. But they're all subject matters from death to health to mental health to, you know, I'm looking
politics,
at politics,
love,
all that, the whole lot.
Yeah.
So it's been quite, it's good fun. It's been one of those things. It's sort of
every, you know, show is different.
You know,
every time you do it, it's slightly
every
different.
Every show is different, but also the same.
Also, loads of the songs are the same.
No, but it's
are you doing this show? Where are you going to be doing this show?
We're doing the Battersea Arts Centre with the Johnny Woo.
Oh, yeah, it's part of Johnny Woo's show. And then in December the 16th, 17th, yeah, it's at Above the Stag in Vauxhall.
And one day, Carnegie Hall.
Yes. Absolutely.
And it won't be my first time in Carnegie Hall. Oh, did I drop that in?
Oh, you've dragged it out of him.
Suze, will this be your first time in Carnegie Hall?
Yeah, it'd be my first time singing outside of London, I think.
We have actually been invited to Vegas, so and we were supposed to go, but I think they pulled the show because I think everyone's going to be a bit nervous about COVID there. But this, the wrong songs might become a brand in Vegas. Which actually, Vegas is very interesting, sort of comedy and stuff like that at the moment. There are little sort of gigs and stuff and little mini shows popping up all over the place. That's sort of like complement those giant kind of Cirque du Soleil shows and stuff.
Yeah, I went actually out there to audition for Absinthe.
I saw that show. Yeah, you were brilliant at that. Yeah.
Well, they're looking for the new gazillionaire, the host of the show.
I didn't get it. But,
that's a shame. They flew me out. Yeah, yeah.
I know, right?
It's a great. Little show, though. Yeah, I saw that, and
it's a really fun show.
Yeah.
But alongside those shows, we also noticed I met a lot of people living in the community out there. Yeah. There's a lot of British people performing in shows out there, and they. Amy Saunders has a show that she does with Cardboard, which is like a game show, like a really cheap game show. But she does it in the casino, and it's just a really fun, silly, weird little show. And I think those shows can take off. So it's something like Wrong Songs in the right room. And you'll be performing like 9 shows a week, but you'll make a nice local audience for yourself, and that I think that would be really great.
I mean, there are quite a lot of really good places outside of the casinos. I think there's my mate's a sort of composer out there, and there's a sort of composer's workshop which has been going for about 10 years sort of thing, and they've quite a big following. All these new, you know, where there's a little local composers and stuff or whatever try stuff out, or a few people flying from New York. So it's interesting where scenes develop, you know. And I think I'm bang on a lot about this, you know, because of say, you know, because Manhattan is so expensive. No, you New York, basically, everything I love about comedy and music and blues and jazz and everything comes from New York. But there's, because that was the great scene, wasn't it? And art, you know, from the 60s onwards. But now, forget it. It's like a museum. It's like a sort of, apart from Broadway, really, it's just a kind of, it's a theme park. So, but where does the talent go? And where do those exciting, it's a bit, you know, anyway, it's a bit like here in London, isn't it? I mean, where do people go? Are they going to Margate? Are they going to, you know, Hastings? Where are these little, Bristol, obviously, is another one. Where are these things starting up? And it's kind of fascinating to sort of, you know.
I thought Bristol, when I first moved here, which is now about 25 years ago, I thought Bristol was one of those places where you had happening music scenes because it was cheap to live there.
Yeah.
And when in Canada, Toronto is like one of the big cities. But if you go where I went to acting school, it's called Windsor, right across the river from Detroit, but it was like a motor town. But that's where all of the punk rockers and all the poets and all the dance companies and anyone that wanted to make their own art would live there, because it was really, really cheap. And I think that's why the Detroit music scene took off, because with Jack White, the White Stripes, and all that stuff, because that was really cheap, really, really cheap, and quite dangerous place to live.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it all comes out on the other side of this pandemic, you know, whether that has any kind of impact, just in terms of all the kind of empty properties around and empty office spaces, just shit like that, whether that has sort of impacts at all. I don't know, really.
Mm.
Well, it's, I mean, I've always been thought that there isn't enough singers, there's not enough music, there's not enough musicians, there's not enough comedy, there's not enough art. Then hopefully what will happen in the pandemic is people will have had time to kind of rediscover the thing that they like doing when they're left alone with nothing to do. I mean, David Lynch, the film director, wrote a piece in, I think it was The Atlantic or something like that. And, you know, he's into transcendental meditation and all that sort of jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And, he's a foundation and everything. But he wrote this piece saying that he thought the pause in life would be a good thing for the spirit or the soul, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever his ideas, that people would start to realize what's important in their lives, their families, their friends, food, you know, the very basic things that we rush through and take for granted on our way to try and create something that's really memorable, when actually those are the things that we should be concentrating on. So maybe that has happened.
Yeah, I went certainly when lockdown first hit, I went, oh, I better start putting stuff online immediately, because I figured just for a moment the whole of the comedy scene, certainly the playing field leveled just a little bit. So I went, right, it's time to. I mean, I was filming videos the day they announced that we won't be making any more EastEnders and it'll be down to two a week. I went, right, and I went home that day and filmed my first stupid EastEnders sketch. Because I was like, well, I'm at home, I might as well be doing that. And I think I saw a lot of comedians doing similar.
Yeah. Well, you've got a big following then from your YouTube stuff, didn't you? You've got loads and loads of videos on there, and doing such a different array of different skits, and then some of your like musical impressions as well.
Well, the Liza Trump thing is genius. That's
people went, oh, how did you come up with that? It's just like, well, it is just Liza saying the words of Donald Trump. So I don't think it's anything smart, especially as it was all written by Donald Trump. But I don't know, that caught on in America too, because it's so ridiculous. It becomes like, oh, brilliant. And there were people going, oh, this is the only way I can stomach Trump's words. Now, unfortunately, he got voted out. so I can't do that anymore. Unfortunately for me.
If people don't know in the podcast, so Sue's very modest. Sue's would take the speeches of Donald Trump and do them as Liza Minnelli, and it got hundreds of thousands of views, and big press, got press in the New York Times, and it got press in the LA Times, and all that sort of stuff. It got it was a real kind of hit, and it's very funny.
Thanks. Well, yeah.
Does that sound genuine?
Yeah, almost.
Oh, come on.
It's a shame.
Is this scripted? Did you guys script this bit?
No. Almost.
I like torturing Suze because you can't take a compliment. So the more you compliment,
I know this about Suze. No, how did you guys meet each other? It wasn't through that, was it? You've known each other for a long time.
It was Johnny Woo's All-Star Cabaret. Johnny Woo's All-Star Brexit Cabaret, which did in Edinburgh a couple of years ago.
It was 2017. Johnny decided he needed just a female musical theatre singer to be in it. And Johnny Woo is huge in the world of cabaret and drag. In that world, I'm the only standard, put in quotation marks, musical theatre singer. So I was the only choice.
I saw you in this.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it twice. I saw it once in Edinburgh. I saw it at the Soho Theatre as well.
She's came to Soho.
And with Kevin.
Kevin Davis. Anna Pershard.
Pershard. That's right. Yeah.
At the Soho, we did it with there's a way of doing it with 10 singers. There's a way of doing it with 5. We did have to do it with 3 once. It's Johnny is like the host of the whole show, and he sings. And then there's me, Adam Pershard, and Kevin Davis. We were playing various parts. So I would come on as David Cameron, and then again as Angela Merkel, and then at the end as Theresa May. Which dates the show, doesn't it? Yeah. It was the big Theresa May
finale. I guess the story that was quite good about it was Johnny's because his parents voted were very very happy Brexiteers, it was kind of looking at all that and how his relationship is such continued or whatever with his father and just getting the comedy out of that. It worked really well, actually, wasn't it? So it was that sort of softened the thing rather than just saying, oh, Brexiteers are cats.
The musical was really interesting because it had it was one of those things that, oh, it dared. Obviously, we were on a Remain bent. That was the way it was leaning. But it pointed out that, yeah, we're better off in the EU, but there's plenty of problems with it, which I think many people didn't dare to do during the referendum. And it, if they had, it might have had a different outcome. If you didn't just go, it's the panacea to all our ills, because people don't trust that, and it's not true. But, yeah, the musical basically said, yeah, we're better off in the EU than out of it. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, it's gone, so you've got to let it go.
I can't let go.
You've got to let it go.
When you think back about the protest songs of the 60s or even going back to before that, This Machine Kills Fascists, all the protest songs and comedy songs and musical comedy songs have always been on the cutting edge of the politics of trying to change politics of change. Because you need to have anthems, and comedy songs are fun, are a way of poking fun at these people. I was thinking even Spitting Image, remember them doing parodies of songs or using songs. I think, did they were in the Frankie Goes to Hollywood video or something? Anyway.
But
just the idea that you can change minds. Not that it's highfalutin, but that you can change minds.
What was that amazing? One of my favourite ones was Boris Johnson is a fucking cunt. Remember that?
That
was completely brilliant, wasn't it?
And there was a viral YouTube.
Boris Johnson is a fucking cunt. He's a fucking cunt.
I want to say it was Cunt and the Gang. James knows. Cunt and the Gang.
Cunt and the Gang.
It is such a funny song, and it's really clever because it just goes to this the kind of key mapping is just great. So it's just constant. It's very kind of music theatre in a way because it's just got this. You've just got this key change after key change after key change, and it's sort of with a few little minor. And it's just so puerile. It's perfect.
It's about him.
And it's repetitious and all that. But it's something that's very honest about it and really funny. If you sort of analysed it, which would, kills it, obviously.
Comedy bears much analysis.
But this is the thing about comedy. Comedy songs, though, that immediacy of that song means that it's... it can be puerile and it can be scatological or it can be childish, because we've been talking on this episode already about childhood songs. Childhood songs tend to be about wee and poo things that make children laugh, fart jokes.
Or me laugh in general, still.
I think people are attracted to that kind of thing. It speaks to our sort of puerile self. I mean, you're obviously trained...
No, I've got a B at O level music. So I was a real grubby autodidact. But I used to I was into heavy metal big time. Obviously I'm boomer, a bit like, not quite, I'm a bit older than you.
Young
Phil.
Boomer, old Gen X.
I'm a boomer as well.
I know. And so when I was there when punk, when first kind of came, just exploded on the scene, and that was incredible liberation. And then I heard Miles Davis Kind of Blue. Which absolutely changed my life. I mean, it was. I remember hearing that, and I just couldn't believe. And hearing all those Bill Evans kind of piano voicings and stuff, I couldn't believe how amazing it was. Also, then when I was 15, I saw a legendary production of Guys and Dolls at the National, and back in those days, me and my twin, we went to London. We slept outside the National all night, right, with about 300 people, because all the tickets were like £2. And and in the morning all the cast came out and they were sort of juggling and shit like this and da da da. Anyway, so we get in the evening. The show was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it to this day. The atmosphere was incredible. Every number was encored and encored, even the lesser known numbers. And Sit Down, You Rock in the Boat had 5 encores. And at the point, the cast were going, shut up, shut up, shut up. And of course, this was our first musical we'd ever been to, me and my twin. I thought, fuck me, man. Mm. This is a genre. I mean, I want, yeah. this is what I want, you know. And I thought every show was like that. How wrong I was. And, you know, in a way, and it's pathetic to say, but I've been trying to recreate that night for somebody else. And, you know, that's, in a way, that was the thing about, you know, I guess with something like Jerry Springer the Opera, which I think is scandalously funny and all that sort of stuff, but there's a big heart to it. And I was always very keen to, you know, to sort of get as much, I don't know, it sounds virtuosity in a way, but also, which, and it's a tough score. People always, you know, they moan their lungs up about how tough, but if you get it right, it's almost throwaway, but there's a lot of skill that's required, which of course is comic timing, you know, as well. Anyway, that was a long answer to something or other. Was it?
Richard, you mentioned Jerry Springer, and I have to ask, how did the idea come up? First of all, who kind of thought about it, and then how did you bring it into to what it is?
I did. Well, there's I'd just written this little piece called Tourette's Diva, which I did for Battersea Arts Centre. It was like this really hideous piece of work, which was like, I thought I'm going to be avant-garde, I'm going to write the most uncommercial thing I can imagine on on the grounds that maybe it would really be commercial sort of thing. But also, I'd been doing a lot of TV, a lot of MD and TV, and I'd hated that, and I thought, I'm going to do something live that's just absolutely fuck you the world sort of thing. Anyway, so I wrote this thing, Tourette's Diva, one opera singer and me and the piano, and it stormed it. It was really funny, and I thought, God, how is this getting laughs? This is a love deserved laughs. It's, you know, visceral, feral, you know, expletive ridden. And then on the back, then Battersea Arts Centre said, well, what do you want to do next? And I sort of went away for a few months, and then I'd come back from gigs and I'd watch Jerry Springer's show, and it used to be very, you know, it was bleeped out, so all the cussing was sort of bleeped out. And remember, in those days, that was such a kind of shock show still to come out of America. Yeah. This was, people forget. But I remember watching one episode thinking, God, this is really annoying. It's all bleeped out. There's eight people screaming at each other. I can't understand a word they're saying. You're destroying my voyeurism. I feel guilty about it. And then it suddenly went, fuck, this is what I want to do. It's like, it's kind of eight people singing at the same time, can't understand what they're saying. It's opera, you know. But also, you know, I was smart enough to know. Also, I love my music theatre so much. You could go, I'm going to call it an opera, but actually, it's kind of a musical, really. Which is, you know, so it was consciously written for music theatre voices and then a few opera voices, and then they were great. Battersea Arts Centre, well, here's a space, just, you know, try out a few gags. So it was me, first time was me and a piano, just trying a few, and, you know, mumbling on. Then second time was me and a couple of singers. And then that got some press traction. This is in front of 50 people. And then the next time was me and a few more songs and maybe four singers. And then somebody said, boom, let's, we'll pay the money for one act version. And then went to Edinburgh with two act version, and the National came and picked it up, and boof, we were off to the races. That took about 2 years, which is quick in music theatre terms. Yeah.
It's super quick.
I got one show at the moment, right? It's taken me 10 years to sell the fucker. And another show, this is just, which I just in lockdown, another show which took 10 minutes.
Did you score the whole thing as well? We were speaking to Tim Minchin last week about the way that he'd done Matilda, he said that he had he made all of these wonderful themes, but then he had an orchestrator to thread them all through. But I'm guessing your background is such that, did you orchestrate it yourself?
No, I tell you what I did was, with all these things, is once it's you'll always get an orchestrator in, because they, with a West End stuff, you need someone who's very smart, who can get six people in the band and make them sound like 20, and that requires keyboard programmers and all that sort of stuff. But also, even because you do changes right to the last minute, it's been a very kind of Broadway thing, or that in the team you'll have, you know, you'll always have an orchestrator there. Which in this case was a guy called Martin Kosh, who did Mamma Mia and all these stuff, and Billy Elliot. Yeah. But he was a big jazzer himself, so he knows the language and he can really, you know, he's got the chops. But even Bernstein on West Side Story and stuff, they'd have additional orchestrators and stuff in, because it's so last minute. You need this. You're responding to, you know. preview audiences and changing. And if you're, you know, there's just not the time to like compose and then orchestrate. But what I give is a very, very tight, dense piano score, piano vocals, and I'll do a lot of the other vocal arrangements because that's where you're looking for all those kind of BV moments of like, you know, gold and little bits of, you know, people chipping in, you know, like it's, so I like to do all that sort of stuff.
That's what makes the show in my opinion. It's all of the really quick swear word coming from over here, but it's done in like 8-part harmony. My partner is an opera singer. Many years ago I remember waking up one morning and her just going chick with a D.
That's right, which is the hard.
I was like, oh yeah. God, yeah. But
I just wanted to sort of serve the same question up to Suze, because you are you're trained though. You went to Royal Academy.
Yeah, I don't come from family money. So, and when I was going to drama school, you had to pay for it. Like it wasn't like going away and doing your English degree and getting a student loan. That wasn't an option. So I went and did a scriptwriting degree, which is a very sensible, very sensible degree. And it was in my second year at uni. So we're what, 2004, 2005. They showed Jerry Springer on television. And I remember watching it really late at night, and I was meant to be doing an essay that I had absolutely zero passion for, and I put it down and watched the whole of Jerry Springer, and I remember just going like, oh no, I still definitely want to do musical theatre.
I'm so sorry. Is it too late to apologise?
So technically, like, if you told 19-year-old me that when you're 36 you will be working with Richard Thomas, I'd be
sitting
like,
in a room drinking red wine
and talking about
one of the most popular comedy songwriting podcasts.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, if you told me that, I'd have gone, I really.
Is that, do your family sing? Are you from a family of singers?
My mum is a dressage rider. there aren't really singers. That's her real job. There aren't really singers in the family. My uncle on my mum's side is a reasonable singer. He's okay. There aren't really singers in the family. So it's weird that me and my brother, we're the only singers, I would say, out of all the Kempners and the Schneiders, that's both sides. But we both are like proper musical theatre singers. So I don't know how it happened. I don't know what the mix of DNA that created that was. But I just loved it. I remember being 7 years old. They went, right, you all go off to assembly now at Burstow Primary School. All go off to assembly now unless you want to try out to sing at the beginning of the Christmas concert. I thought, well, I'll just do that because then I don't have to go to assembly. And I got the solo at the beginning of the Christmas concert, and I went, oh, I see, that's the thing. I can sing a song. That's a thing. And then
what was the song?
Once in Royal David City, the ultimate Jewish carol. I didn't realise. I didn't know until then. Like, oh, that's a singing. You can be a singer if you want. I wasn't very good. I was 7.
Well, you must have been pretty good because you're still
for, like, for a 7-year-old, it wasn't like, oh, look who's here, it's Barbara Streisand.
You also see these young kids who are amazing singers. You see them on the X Factor, The Voice, or even before that, you see them blowing people away with their voice, and then they become teenagers and just lose it.
Yeah, it does happen. Yeah, yeah.
It didn't happen to you. So.
I guess. But I always really, really, really loved it. And my mum got me on horses from... I was a year old. I wasn't even really talking before she got me on a horse. It's probably really dangerous, actually, because they were big horses too. But if I'd wanted a career in dressage, I had all the contacts, but I was never, ever good enough, and I wasn't ever going, like, I want to be a professional dressage rider. So singing, I always loved it. always, always loved it.
I feel a show coming on. Couldn't you mix those together, Richard? Do dressage.
Do the thing where the horses dance to Sue's singing.
Oh, that could happen with me on the horse.
Horses don't do 8 show a week. It's a real problem, you know.
They're divas.
Divas.
But Sue's is a very. I tell you what's good about Sue's. I'm going to now give Sue's another compliment. Which is
I don't like it.
Just close your ears. It's like, she's got a stupendous technique, and of course she's got comic timing, which is brilliant. Yeah. So, but she's got a really good technique, and she can read music. Thanks. So that's great. So for little nerds like me who go, I'm like, well, actually, I think it should be the rest should be a 16th there. How should we have the 16th?
Okay.
But you know, she's got it, and just like it's just, and it's all about you know. Brick wall tempi changes and shit like that, and just going, especially with these little small gags, you're knocking them out like they're nothing, but they're sort of leaps of keys and tempi and stuff like that, and they're just and that takes a great deal of skill, which of course it has to look as though it's effortless. So it's the art behind
that's
the art.
Dressage. It has to look like you're doing nothing.
But no one wants to watch dressage.
I do.
Okay. But anyway, that's so Scoots has a level of skill which is very, very rare.
Well, thank you, Richard.
And comic timing. Also, she knows what it's like to die in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
Not all the time.
Quite often. But basically, I finished my script writing degree and I ended up going to Royal Academy of Music. And thank goodness I did. Because otherwise, if I hadn't, I'd have 15 grand. Instead, I got to lose all
that. That's quite a lot, isn't it?
It was 11 grand. But
but you had a kind of legendary course, and there's a lot of, you know...
Yeah, the musical theatre 1 year at the... They do one course, 30 people at the Royal Academy of Music. And certainly when I was trying to do it, it was like the course. Mm. I don't really know. They changed tiers, the drama degree. It's probably arts ed now. But... the RAM course was enough to make people go, oh, you went to RAM. You're like, yeah, but we were also 30 idiots who used to go to Weatherspoons on a Friday night and drink till it closed. It's, when we were there, I didn't go, like, what a special group of people, because drama students aren't. Like,
but the training was excellent.
The training is very, very good there, yeah.
And then I've got no training, but I had the best no training possible.
Did someone, so you're self-taught, but obviously as David, you're not self-taught, are you, David? You trained.
No, I'm self.
You're so.
I had piano teachers, but that was it. I didn't go to university. I got a D in my A level, and then I went.
I got a C at music A level.
See, there you go. And now, what do? We do music.
Exactly.
So, if any children listening, number one, you shouldn't be. And number two, if you fail, you can still have a podcast.
And number three, check out Cunt and the Gang.
It's a great song.
They all trained.
Cunt and the Gang are all trained.
But you know what it's like? You learn on the job, you know? It's like in the end, like, I mean, you know, does anyone learn how to be a comedian? I mean, you know, you did tons of stuff. It's like, who teaches anybody to actually...
Yeah, you've just got to do it, haven't you?
In a way. But also, I think there is a... especially with writing shows, it's... ignorance is very helpful, I think, in the early stages. I now know a lot about music theatre, about structure and about, you know, songcraft and all that sort of stuff. But back then, I didn't have a clue. But I sort of had big, big hunches. And, of course, because you do comedy, and I used to do a double act for about 8 or 9 years, I was used to the, you know, get to the point as quick as you can, make sure it's funny, don't hang around or else you're fucked, you know. And that was a very useful skill, it turned out, when you're going into music theatre, because I was MD on a show, which was a massive flop, up in Edinburgh. I had a lot of money spent on it, and every number had, like, an intro of about sort of 16 bars, and it was just, you know, and I was positioned as the keyboard. I could see the audience, and I had the band, and people would come and see the show because it was so shit. They'd be like, oh, and they could see these... And a great friend of mine, who's actually sadly just died recently, he's a brilliant, brilliant producer, and he said, because I was depressed after about week one, I was like, oh, God, this is really sick. He goes, no, Rich, this is where you're going to learn how to write a show. And it was. So the combination of doing comedy and then doing this show where every where you just go, forget about intros, which is why I still have a sort of psychological fear of the intro, it's not like that. It's just like, off you go, sing it now, no, no. You know what I mean?
If I ask for a bell note, I get slapped. Slap me, you guys, I'll slap you in the teeth.
Anyway, it's very fascinating, all that process and all that. And I find it endlessly fascinating. And Comic Timing, endlessly fascinating.
The reason David and I, when we met on our walk and decided to make this podcast, is not just for it to be like a dumb, funny, let's listen to silly comedy songs, because they are brilliant, but also talk to people about how they go about making it.
I have one more question that I'd like to ask, and that is, do either of you have a favourite comedy song that you've heard or that maybe inspired you?
Oh, my God. Well, I grew up watching a lot of Victoria Wood, but I think the thing that inspired me most that is musical comedy, and people would probably forget that, is Steve Coogan did a live show in the late 90s called The Man Who Thinks He's It. You ever see this? And I was a teenager. Yeah. We had the VHS at home because my parents are big comedy fans. And he does a bunch of songs in that show, and they're all like, they're all by Steve Brown,
yeah,
and they're
brilliant.
Like good, really good comedy songs. And Steve Coogan's quite musical, so you buy them as well. You buy it as a song performed by that character, and the Tony Farino character isn't like my favourite Steve Coogan character, but the songs are really funny. There's one called Lap Dancing Lady, and it sounds just like a naff pop song, but it's really funny.
It does. Tony Farino, I think Tony Farino had his own, didn't Tony Farino have his own show?
Yeah, I think there was he had a TV special, didn't he?
I remember the Not in the 9 o'clock News comedy songs. I think that was my first real kind of exposure to that, boomer time. And, but they were very cool. So you'd watch those and you'd be in the playground the next day or whatever, and people would sing a bank, and people going, joking about and loving the comedy song,
Well, I just went to see at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park, Harry Hill has working on a musical. Tony Blair, the
with
rock
Charlie.
Musical. And it's Steve Brown is the composer. And it's very, very funny with Charlie Baker. It's super. It's still obviously in the workshop stage, but that is going to be fantastic, I think. So... and maybe it might be the next Jerry Springer.
Who knows?
Well, we'll see.
I'm doing a musical with Grayson Perry, about the Grayson Perry musical.
What?
We did a 2-week workshop on the National a couple of weeks ago, and Suze played the mother.
I was Grayson's mother.
Yeah. Feels a little bit like...
doing something too.
Well, I'm doing something.
What am I? What's it called? What's the piece...
Well, I think I'm not quite sure what it's called.
Grayson, the musical.
At the moment, it's called Grayson, the musical. I'm sure that's okay. The working title.
I think it's a good title.
We need to do our wrap up with you guys. You guys, thank you so much for coming. For coming on to the podcast. it's been so wonderful to have you. Thank you, and it's been so wonderful to meet you as well.
And you, thanks for having us.
It brings us to our favorite part of the episode, where we get our guest artist to sing a little song or do a little performance. And you've already been doing that, but we wondered if you would be interested in performing something a little more long form for us.
Ooh. Oh my goodness! Oh my God. Would you want to do
something? What would you like?
We're going to do Princess Jazz Reflections on Princess Michael of Kent, sung by Kate Bush. So it's Jazz Reflection, Princess Michael of Kent, sung by Kate Bush. Followed by a thing called Tears of a Clown. It's a pandemic song.
Oh, yeah.
Called The Tears.
It was back, you remember when we had lockdown Tears?
Not funny, but it's
quite
nice.
It's quite retro.
It's quite nice. And then we could do, so we should do that.
Those will do.
Okay, here we go. This is cool. Jazz Reflection.
Don't play the piano too loud, though.
Oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. I've got 6 reviews in the New York Times for years. And you're telling me that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. It's in the music theatre section and the opera section.
Right? Why are you in the opera section? Okay, no. All right. Jazz Reflections on Princess Michael of Kent, sung by Kate Bush. Princess Michael of Kent, what the fuck is it you do? Seriously, I've got no clue. So why don't you tell me? Princess Michael of Kent.
This is the Tears of the Clown.
Oh, God. I've been drinking. I can't do it. That one. Let's do that one.
Oh, yeah.
You're the little lamb at the height of its frisk. You're the cream that just holds its shape on the whisk. You're the funny punchline to my gentle joke. You're the perfect poached egg with a runny yolk. You're my imaginary boyfriend. I imagine you.
Enough now. Thank you for joining us on Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye, goodbye.
Well, that was Suze Kempner and Richard Thomas here on Songs in the Key of Laugh.
I loved it. I absolutely loved interviewing them. And we are getting some serious, serious names on this show at the moment.
It's been pretty darn good.
Richard Thomas, he wrote the Jerry Springer opera.
Yeah, he did.
That is incredible.
And if you want to hear more or see more of Richard Thomas or Suze Kempner, why not visit Suze at her website, suzekempner.co.uk, or Richard Thomas at his website, richardthomascreative.com. Or why not go and see their show at the BAC?
Wrong songs.
Wrong songs.
Wrong songs. Please keep on sending in your songs for the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Contest at songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
And remember to support the podcast at patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh or ko-fi.com Songs the Key of Laugh.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.